This is Welcome Home Radio, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on locally owned KYNO. Brought to you by the Community Housing Council. Now, here's your host, Don Scordino.
Well, good morning. It's time for Welcome Home Radio. This is Don Scordino, your weekly host. We're now in our 18th year of bringing you great local information about our community, about real estate, the needs and dreams in real estate, but also all different facets of real estate, not just home buying. But today we're going to really get into home renting and what that rental market is like. But remember, each week we bring you different guests with different viewpoints, but most of all, some very good advice to help you make informed decisions about housing and community involvement. Speaking of community, we want to thank our sponsor, the Community Housing Council of Fresno. And also, if you miss this show on Saturday, you can always go to www.kynofresno.com, and it'll be archived there for well over a year, and you can tune in at that time. All right, I'd like to introduce today's guests. First, we have John Cadwallader, a local attorney and real estate broker. Good morning.
Good morning, Don. Thank you for having me.
Sure. And I know you specialize in landlord-tenant law. What got you into that?
Goodness. Passed the bar exam, and one of my friends had an eviction they needed done and asked if I could help with it. And I suppose I must have been successful at it because I just continued doing them and growing more and more clients, and it became a niche practice.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And then we also have a property manager here, and that's John Krikorian of Shelter Property Management.
Good morning, Don.
Yeah.
Good to be with you.
Yeah. Now, I've known John a long time. In fact, I just learned something interesting today about both of these guests. I was telling John Cadwallader that, John Krikorian flew me to Sacramento one time, because Krikorian is a pilot also. Come to find out, so is Cadwallader. See, I can't call you guys John. It's either going to be simple on me today to just say, hey, John, and you're both going to speak at the same time, or I'll just go by last names. How's that?
Sure.
Perfect.
All right. So, in general, what is the Fresno County rental market like right now? Let's compare it to, let's say, 20 years ago.
Well, I think it's a little bit slower than 20 years ago. And I don't know what the reason is, but we have had a lot of new laws that were created. And so people are reluctant to hold rentals. But I would say it's a little bit slower.
Mm-hmm. You are right about the new law thing. And we're going to get into a lot of that during the show. And I can say, because I have been my own property manager, my own rental properties for the last 40-some years, boy, things have changed.
Yes, they have.
Yeah. How about John Cadwallader, from your side of it, from the attorney side of it, how would you compare the market now to... You're younger, so I'm not going to go back 20 years.
Yeah, please don't. Well, what I can say, just from a few years ago, when we file evictions in the old days, the landlords just wanted the tenants gone, and they wanted to try their hand with somebody new. But nowadays, we're doing a lot more workout-type agreements where the tenants are given an opportunity to cure the default. And I think that's just because landlords have so much vacancy that they are just doing anything they can to avoid having one more open listing. So that's something that I've seen over perhaps the last couple of years. But to new laws, the state really didn't do small landlords any favors with the Tenant Protection Act that passed during 2020, which establish statewide rent limits and eviction restrictions. That's still in place today. And so it's more important than ever for small landlords to stay on top of new laws or to hire a knowledgeable real estate realtor, property manager to help them navigate all of these new rules. Really, small landlords can avoid some of the strictest rules as long as they have the correct language in their lease agreements. And so using a California Association of Realtors lease or some of the other associations that have standardized lease forms that are regularly updated is more important than ever.
Mm-hmm. Tell us more about a workout. What's involved in a workout?
Well, it depends on the situation. Most of the time, we're evicting a tenant for a failure to pay rent. And in that case, a workout's going to look like either payment in full of the past due rent, the attorney's fees and court costs, or perhaps there could be a monthly payment plan. It depends on the amount that's owed, the relationship between the landlord and the tenant, the tenant's ability, of course, and so, yeah, and oftentimes, really, what season it is. Earlier in the spring, when tenants are getting large, tax refund checks, we do really large paid in full agreements. And, at other times of the year, maybe around the holidays, things are a little bit tougher. And so it might be a lengthy monthly payment stream. But ultimately, it depends on the needs of my client and what the tenant's ability is.
I got a great story about a workout that I experienced, and I am so, so glad I did this workout with the tenant. All of a sudden, I'd had trouble with them in the past where they were late quite a bit, but they'd always, 8th or 9th or 10th of the month, they'd come dragging in, pay the rent. Always had a good excuse, right? So, but one time, all of a sudden, boom, no call back, nothing. So at some point, I had to hire an attorney to do the eviction. We got all the way into it to where the sheriff was scheduled to come out. And I finally got a phone call, and it was the most complete apology you could ever imagine. She said, "You have been nothing but good to us. We just got ourselves into some trouble. It was embarrassing." And she said, "We will be out next Wednesday before the sheriff gets here, and it'll be clean." But the important part is that it was such a complete, thorough apology. She didn't lay one bit of guilt on me, like, it's a dump or anything like that, the typical stuff. I called her back to tell her that. She told me what had happened, and she said that's no excuse. But, hey, I'm a human being also. I said, let's work it out. I put her in touch with the attorney. I said, you guys work that out. They ended up staying about another 3 years. They were perfect, beautiful tenants. I even hired her son to work with me and help me out on a few other places. It ended up being a great situation. So, yeah. Filing a eviction or unlawful detainer doesn't mean you got to be enemies forever.
No, that sounds like a great resolution, and that's what we hope to see. And from the landlord's perspective, he saved a ton of money not having to do a rehab, and the vacancy losses, and I'm glad that worked out for you.
Yeah, well, I still remember what a judge told me one time. We were in court, and he says, you two have chosen to litigate. This is in small claims court. He goes, you've chosen to litigate. You could have chosen to arbitrate. You could have chosen to mediate. But the two of you failed to communicate. He made us go out into the hallway and work it out ourselves. And he said, if you come back in 10 minutes and you have something reasonable worked out, I'm going to sign off on it. Shoot, we weren't even out there 5 minutes and we had it worked out.
That's really the best when the parties can reach an agreement. And to your point, communication is key. That's something that a lot of my clients look for in determining whether they want to continue the tenancy or not.
Isn't that a mandatory requirement that when you go to court, the judge sends you out and you talk about it and come to an agreement? And if he likes the agreement, it'll be like his judgment.
We settle the vast majority of unlawful detainer cases, and they're not always workouts. They may involve the tenant vacating and making payments towards what's owed. But yes, being able to reach a resolution that both parties agree to is usually going to be the best for both sides. It avoids the uncertainty of litigation. It avoids additional expense. Having to wait and engage in the full trial. I'm not sure if it's required necessarily in Fresno, but it certainly is highly encouraged, and it's something that I try to engage with in each case.
Yeah, I cannot stress the importance of communication. In fact, the last place I would want to go is to court, but sometimes you feel like you have to when the other party fails to communicate back to you. So anyway, with that, it is time for our first commercial break. But when we get back, John Krikorian had raised his hand. He's got a question. So we'll talk about that. But we're also going to talk about a thing called AB 1482 and how that changed the landscape of the rental market. So stay tuned. Well, welcome back to Welcome Home Radio. This is Don Scordino, your host, and we have John Krikorian, a property manager with Shelter Property Management here, along with John Cadwallader, who is a local real estate attorney that deals with landlord-tenant law. So we're talking a lot today about landlord-tenant relationships. Speaking of the word relationship, we ended the first segment talking about communication, but I think John Krikorian has more you want to say on that communication.
Yes, on the subject of communication, it is important for tenants to always communicate with the landlord, because when they don't, the landlord is going to assume the worst, and the worst would be they trashed the place, they left the place, and who knows what. But when they communicate and they say, we are in some financial difficulty right now, I have no problem giving them some leeway to pay it in two or three payments or a month later. So it's always good to communicate.
And I'm going to back you up on that one. You like to rent to good people. Good people will communicate, because that's showing you the respect that you deserve, just as you would do with them. They deserve respect too. So if you didn't communicate with them, that's a lack of respect. So yeah, that's got to happen, that good communication. Because when we fail to communicate, then we end up in one of the other three: mediate, arbitrate, or litigate. And that's where John Cadwallader comes in. So, John, do you get involved in mediations?
Oh, absolutely. To John's question earlier, generally we start every unlawful detainer trial with an opportunity to discuss resolution with the tenant. It may not be formal mediation. In some circumstances, we can involve a mediator. It just depends on the case and what the court's resources are. But yeah, that's certainly a valuable tool mm-hmm. to help negotiate with the between the parties.
I was in a mediation one time, and it was in regard to a security deposit and how much I gave back, and the mediator listened. The judge told us to go into mediation. It was mandatory mediation in this case. We went there and we each gave our side of the story. And I remember the mediator saying, oh my gosh, this one's complicated. You guys are going to have to go in front of the judge. I said, well, wait a minute. Before we do that, this is the old thing about negotiation. Give a little. If the, and the other side gives a little, you'll find resolution. I said, you know, I always liked you as a tenant. How about if I give this much back? And you, and anyway, it started the communication. We worked it out. And 4 or 5 years later, they bought a home from me. Mm. So because there was goodwill in that business relationship, they respected me for that part of it. And heck, I thought the world of them even before all of that. But
magic happens at the courthouse doors. Folks that you never thought would be able to reconcile or are able to work things out. And that's probably one of the the better parts of my job is trying to see if everyone can leave a little bit happy with the proceedings of the day.
Yeah, I remember a key thing about negotiation is find the common ground. Yeah, so and something that I realized in that security deposit thing, their feelings were hurt because they didn't like it that somebody else had to clean up for them because they thought they did a good job. Eh. But once I saw that, I was able to find that common ground. And that I think it was $250 that I threw out there that, by golly, was rightfully mine. Shoot, I got that back tenfold when they bought a home from me.
Very good.
Yeah.
There you go.
Right. Let's now go into this thing called AB 1482. Because it's an assembly bill, it's a legal matter, I'm going to turn to our attorney and say, what is that thing? And how did it change the landscape of the rental markets?
Boy, the legislature really slipped AB 1482 kind of, I think, under the radar. It's also referred to as the Tenant Protection Act, it took effect January 1, 2020, and, 2020 was a busy year after that, and so I think the Tenant Protection Act, or AB 1482, just nobody really paid attention to it. There were so many COVID restrictions, it was just kind of a minor thing in the scheme of things back then. But basically what it did is the Tenant Protection Act limits the amount that landlords can increase rent each year. And it also requires that if a landlord wants to terminate a tenancy in a residential property, that they have to use only certain reasons. And it could be, for instance, the tenant's failure to comply with the rental agreement, like failing to pay rent. Or it could be the landlord's desire to sell the property or to substantially remodel it would be examples of causes where the tenant's not necessarily at fault, but the landlord nonetheless wants to terminate the tenancy. Now, the law automatically applies to all residential tenancies once the tenant's been in possession for 12 months, unless there's an exemption. The most common exemption is the separately alienable exemption. What that means is essentially single family homes, condominiums, any dwelling that can be sold separate from another dwelling can be exempt as long as the landlord or their manager includes the appropriate exemption language in the rental agreement when it's signed. And then there are other exemptions for new homes. Scenarios where the tenants live with the landlords, and a few others that are not too common.
And one thing I want to stress about that, just because you're an individual and you own a single family residence that you're renting out, that doesn't make you exempt. You have to actually opt out. So your rental agreement needs to say that you are exempt from the Tenant Protection Act. Otherwise, you are in.
That's right. Every tenancy July 1, 2020 or later needs to have that language in it.
I think it's also, if you want to live in it or a relative live in it, you can evict them. Is that not true, John?
So I didn't list all of the available reasons. The owner move-in or the owner's family move-in is an available reason, but for tenancies after... I believe it's 2023, the rental agreement has to specifically allow that as a cause. Yeah. And so, you know, there's a lot of, you know, you really just need to stay on top of your rental agreement forms, make sure you're using the most current versions of the forms, because the realtors and a lot of my clients use the California Apartment Association forms. You know, are generally kept up to date. But yeah, if you don't, for instance, if you didn't have language in your rental agreement specifying that the owner could move in to the property and the tenancy could be terminated for that reason, that would not be an available reason under the Tenant Protection Act.
I think one of the other exemptions is, well, relatives moving in, because I have a case similar to that right now, that a relative is going to move in and they can evict a tenant, yeah.
Yes, and so as long as, you know, you just want to make sure your rental agreements are up to date and you're able to use that.
Yeah, but you bring out a good point, and this is how the state legislature got so involved after AB 1482. It's complicated now. See, I didn't know that about the new change in 2023, and I'm involved in the business. So if I'm a real estate broker, I've been doing this for years and years, it's getting complicated.
Yeah. I think there are limits to how much you can increase the rent to tenants, and it's usually is 5% plus the local CPI, the Consumer Price Index, mm-hmm. which would be at this point, I think for Fresno County is 7.7%. That's the limit. Now, if you own the house individually, or mom and pop, husband and wife own a rental, they can opt out of these conditions. But if you are an LLC, or a corporation, you cannot just evict tenants at will or under those conditions.
Now, you use the term evict. Here's one I want to ask you both. Is there actually a difference between terminating a contract and evicting somebody?
I'll just note that LLCs are able to take advantage of the separately alienable exemption. It's corporations are not. And I think that was to avoid these large corporate REITs, these nationwide investment companies from taking advantage of the exemption. But to your point, a lot of folks associate the notice that terminates the tenancy with an eviction. And that's not the case. There are, for instance, in John's scenario where he wanted a family member to move into the home, the tenant didn't do anything wrong in that situation. And just because the tenant may have been served with a notice terminating the tenancy shouldn't, you know, ascribe anything negative to the tenant at all. It's just, you know, unfortunately, they need to move out. And so the eviction may not ever need to happen if the tenant moves out in accordance with the notice, everyone's happy. The eviction really takes effect once the tenant is unlawfully detaining the property once that notice expires.
Thank you. And that's important, because if you're a tenant and you've been your contract has been terminated, that doesn't mean you're evicted. So when you go to the next place and they fill out an application and they ask you, have you ever been evicted? No, you haven't been. Eviction is for you breached the contract and you were forcibly taken, not physically, but a judge made a judgment saying, hey, you got to move. Termination is something that all contracts do eventually.
Right.
So, you know what? It's time for our next commercial break, but stay tuned to Welcome Home Radio, 940 KYNO.
I'm proud of the house we built. It's stronger than sticks, stones, and steel.
Well, welcome back to Welcome Home Radio. This is Don Scordino, your host, here in the studio. Just to confuse me today, we have John Cadwallader and John Krikorian. John Krikorian is a property manager. John Cadwallader is a landlord-tenant specialist attorney. So we're talking about what the rental market and all the new stuff that's going on. Speaking of new stuff, let's call it new laws. What kind of new laws are out there? I understand there's some big deal about refrigerators.
Well, now we have to provide refrigerators, and I ask tenants if they need one, we have to provide it, and which increases the cost on the landlord. If the refrigerator goes out, you have to repair it, or if it needs replacement, you have to replace it. So it's more burden on the landlord.
Yeah, that is a burden and a cost. What if the tenants have been there for years and they have their own refrigerator? What happens?
The rental agreement was renewed, the rent was increased, or there was a new rental agreement that was signed after January 1 of 2026, that's when the requirement kicks in. For tenants like that, the landlord should, and the landlord's okay with the tenant continuing to provide their own refrigerator, the party should enter into a mutually written agreement outlining that the tenant has elected to bring their own refrigerator. The realtors have a form for that, or you can call my office and we'll help with that. But you should have that written consent for the tenant to provide the refrigerator. If you don't have that document in the file and the refrigerator breaks, then it's on the landlord for a habitability defect, and potentially the tenant could, claim that they don't owe the full amount of the rent because the refrigerator's not working. And so it's definitely something that the landlord should stay on top of.
All right. Landlords should go out shopping and be prepared. Where are you going to get one and get it quick so the food doesn't spoil?
Well, and that's really a dirty trick in the law. Even if the parties agree in writing that the tenant's going to provide the refrigerator, the tenant can change their mind at any time with 30 days notice and obligate the landlord to provide a refrigerator within 30 days of giving notice to the landlord. And so you almost, for larger landlords, I think a lot of them are essentially warehousing the refrigerators just in case. It's certainly a difficult topic, but it's one of those laws that kind of came out of an issue in Los Angeles, I think, where traditionally no landlords provided refrigerators. I get down in the Southland, and the legislature got upset with it, and so they make our lives more difficult here in the Valley.
Yeah, and to be honest, here locally, I never really heard of a problem like that. And I know I've had some tenants say, I'd love to rent the place and I want to rent it to them, but they couldn't afford a refrigerator. So I made a wise business decision to provide one for them. Mm-hmm. So some of mine already had that, but it was on a case by case basis because I know I have another one where, man, they got a supersonic refrigerator with every bell and whistle on it. And of course they wanted to keep theirs. But what you're saying is now they can give me 30-day notice and say, change it.
Absolutely. And what's even more concerning is the risk that the tenant may take your refrigerator and put it outside and move the supersonic one in. And so it's important to have language in your rental agreement that, you know, prohibits the tenant from removing your appliances unless everyone's on board with it. So it's you know, it's one of those statutes, I think, that is kind of a solution in search of a problem. But, you know, that it is what it is.
Well, oftentimes the legislature creates a new law and they don't look into all the unintended consequences. And this might be one of them. So if I'm hearing you right, it's would be smart of a landlord to have a new agreement regarding just the refrigerator with the what ifs.
I would encourage you to do that. Again, if you're using a management company, the realtors have updated forms. The apartment associations have forms to accommodate these outcomes. Or, my clients, we can help them draft language if they need assistance with the issue. But it's definitely something you want to consider.
With the proper language, is it fair for the landlord to say, yes, I'll provide you with a new one, however, I need to take away the old one?
Meaning take away the tenant's refrigerator?
Well, yeah, basically you trade refrigerators.
Well, you know, unless the tenant agrees in writing, that may be the required outcome under the statute. Because the landlord now has this obligation to provide a refrigerator unless the tenant agrees in writing to provide their own. So, yeah, in theory, the statute may obligate the tenant to remove their refrigerator so that the landlord can provide one. Or, I guess in an unusual scenario, a stove. Keep in mind, the statute does not allow the tenant to bring their own stove. So if they had a fancy Wolf Range, in the home, they have to say goodbye to that, and the landlord can, provide one that may not meet the tenant's desires.
Speaking of that, in bells and whistles, does the landlord have to provide a certain standard of a refrigerator? Does it have to have an ice maker and a water spigot?
Boy, you're testing me, but I would say that the statute says that the refrigerator needs to be appropriate to the, to the size of the home. So perhaps if it was a studio, it might be a smaller refrigerator. A larger home may need a larger refrigerator. I know ice makers are not required, but I'll let John comment on the market.
I don't think there's a requirement I didn't know that there was a size requirement for smaller or larger units, but it doesn't have to have an ice maker. I have put in refrigerators that don't have ice makers, the old-fashioned type where you fill the little tray and put it in the freezer and you freeze it. That's the kind of ice that you make. Mm-hmm. Maybe someday we will get there, because it's always with the California legislature, everything is just squeezing the landlord's side.
Yeah. All right. So as far as the refrigerator goes, let's get off that topic. I think let's shut the door on that topic. There's a new law out there about electronic refund of security deposits. Who can tell me about that one?
I'll take the lead. This one, I think the legislature, I'm almost going to say they were close to being on the right track here. And what they did is they allowed the parties to agree how to refund the security deposit and how to provide that disposition of the statement once the tenant moves out. Again, if you're noticing a common theme in my comments, is to make sure that you're using up-to-date rental agreement forms. The newer versions of the forms from the apartment associations provide ample room to specify how the landlord is to refund the deposit and provide the security deposit statement. And the law will back up the parties if they have a mutual written agreement as to how those two things are going to happen. But if the parties don't agree, or they're using outdated forms and it doesn't specify what happens, then under the new rule, if a landlord accepts an electronic payment of rent or security from a tenant, and there's only one tenant in the household, the landlord is required to offer an electronic refund.
Interesting. All right. So I want you to know that we can tell who the attorney is here in the room because you got notes. See? No.
This stuff is so complicated that it's helpful. You know, you really can't do it unless you're really looking at the forms.
I don't think I've had a problem of refunding either by check or by if somebody says, yes, I will accept a Zelle payment, no problem. I think as long as they're receiving it in a timely manner, I think they're okay with it.
Yeah. One last question before we go to the commercial break. What is the timeliness or the time requirement for refunding a security deposit?
You want me to take that? It's 21 days, and you have to give an accounting of what you spent it on, and then the remainder in a form of a check or Zelle or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's 21 days.
Boy, as we go to commercial break, I'm thinking the state legislature really, really got involved in all this because this is what you got to do. You got to do. What happened to the good old days? All right, that's just a thought as we go to our next commercial break. Stay tuned to Welcome Home Radio. Well, welcome back to Welcome Home Radio. This is Don Scordino, your host. We have John Krikorian of Shelter Property Management here in the studio and John Cadwallader, landlord-tenant attorney. And we've been talking a lot about the rental market here in the local Fresno County area. But I know there's been a lot of new laws that apply to applications. But along with applications comes the bad story of there are potential scams and frauds out there. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the legitimate application process first. What can be expected when a tenant is going out to apply? Do they need to bring a credit report with them? Go ahead, John.
My application process is, first of all, I want to show them the house. I want to make sure that they like the house. Second is I give them an application form. There's a fee for a credit report. And also, most of the time, if they have pay stubs, I would like to have at least the last four copies of the pay stubs so I know where they work, how much they make, so I know that they're qualified to pay the rent that the landlord is asking. Other than that, copy of their license, copy of their Social Security card, because those are things that attorneys require when they have to go to court and later collect. Those are things that they can use. So those are the things that we go by.
All right. In the application process, what are the things that you look for?
I look for longevity of a job. I look for their credit report, FICO score. And those two things will give you a lot of indications. And I also want to meet them when I show them the house to see what kind of people they are. I usually want to see who I'm renting to. And if there's a person who has a spouse who's not present or a partner who's not present, I tell them that if that person is going to be on the contract, I want to meet them personally. Because as far as scams are concerned, long time ago when I first got into the business, somebody really scammed me. And she put in an application totally on her mother's credit report, her mother's job, and so forth. And because they had the same last name, I took her in, and then she defaulted, and we had a big problem because she did not pay, and I had to evict her. And then later I found the mother, and she said, I had no idea that my daughter has done this. So those are the things that I want to meet them mm-hmm. personally. That's the reason.
And meeting them personally is important, too. I remember one, because you have to feel comfortable with them that they are respectful to you, just as you'll be respectful to them. And here's a situation I had. I was still cleaning up the house. I hadn't even put it on the market yet. So no one knew, is it a one-bedroom or a four-bedroom home? This guy pulls up, parked way too close to my car, gets out, flings a cigarette out onto the lawn that happened to be dry because the previous tenant hadn't been watering it, and walks in. He's no more than 5-6 steps in the door, and he goes, man, I like this. I'll take it. And I got all the cash. I got first, last, and deposit. Well, not only did I think, well, this guy's disrespectful for flinging a cigarette out there, but also he doesn't know how many bedrooms. How does he know he really loves it? It was a red flag, and sure enough, I checked it out. And yeah, he was being evicted from the place he was at now. And because it had a roof, it was better than, because he was going to be, the sheriff was showing up in a few days. Yeah. And of course, the house was good. It had a roof. Yeah. So you go ahead.
There's a syndrome that I've developed or found out in the rental market, that somebody who's not qualified will sometimes be willing to pay more than your ask the market value. Somebody who has a good credit, they're going to use their good credit or their job to the maximum possible. They're not going to overpay a rental. So if it's too easy, my antenna goes up.
I like that, and I agree with you. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes the worst applicants are willing to do whatever.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
All right. What about, what should a tenant look out for? Because there is some scams out there where people are trying to rent out someone else's home. They want you to wire the money before you even see the house, before you meet anybody. What are the red flags there, and how can we protect ourselves?
Boy, you know, I kind of like this idea of meeting the tenants in person. I feel like a lot of my clients these days think so many things are done electronically that personal approach has kind of been lost. But I've seen pay stubs that are, altered digitally or the old-fashioned way. Driver's licenses where the numbers, names, dates of birth have been changed. I only see the problems generally. So I get to, it's always fun to look at the applications and see what, if maybe something was missed or, just from my own knowledge, what kind of should be a red flag in the future. And so it's really a hard one. What I would suggest to clients is that when the rental references are very important, to call the former landlord or the past couple landlords. And something that I'm always cognizant of is making sure that you're getting accurate information as to who the former landlord is. And so I like to look and see who the owner of record is for the previous home that the tenant's moving out of, and see if that name matches the landlord that's listed on the application, or if it's to some Joe Blow person. Because these days, folks can go on the internet and they can buy application packages. They can buy the references, someone that'll pretend to be the employer, the whole document suite. So it's more important than ever that landlords try to do their due diligence and make sure that the information matches up. Another thing that I've seen is our tenants that are essentially being tricked to rent a vacant property from the wrong landlord. Scammers will lift photographs from genuine listings and essentially trick tenants to move in under below market rents. And, tenants end up being out rent the deposit. And occasionally we'll run into situations where this tenant has actually moved into the landlord's property, and the landlord calls the police. The tenant has a rental agreement with some landlord nobody's ever heard of, and they've got to hire me and deal with this for a couple of months. So it's difficult out there, but I like your the in-person approach that you both take. There's something
I
to
like
learn from the old school.
Yeah. Speaking of old school, my very first rental, I was in partnership with my uncle, who was really, really old school. I think I'm old school. Hey, I'm straight out of college, and I know all the things that we're supposed to do and the application process and the debt-to-income ratios. And so he comes in. He goes, hey, I got the house rented out. I go, oh, great. Let me see the application, and let me see this. All he had was a piece of paper with their name, social security number, and some information, and how much they were going to pay. That was their contract, too. I mean, talk about old school. Those people, but he met them personally. He really liked them. They liked him. They ended up renting for decades, not just years. They were the best people. And so there you go. Hey, we only got about a minute left in the show. So what do you want our listeners to remember most about today's show? John Cadwallader, you go first.
Boy, you've either got to stay on top of this if you're a landlord, or hire a professional management company to help, or consider joining one of the apartment associations like the California Apartment Association for current forms.
All right. Thank you. John Krikorian.
Keep your FICO score, or pay attention to your FICO score, because that tells a lot. And the other thing is, if it's too good to be true, either way, from a landlord's point of view or the tenant's point of view, it's probably a scam if it's too good to be true.
All right.
And then communication is important. And also, one thing that is pets is a big issue. And nowadays there's comfort pets and so forth. Make sure you document, if you're a landlord, you document that it is a legitimate pet.
All right. Yeah, we didn't even have time to get into all of that about pets. So anyway, what I want everybody to remember is how much we appreciate our listenership and our guests who come in to help us out and keep us informed. So we will be back again next Saturday. So stay tuned to Welcome Home Radio, 940 KYNO.